Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
What a day, what a day, what a day. Had a nice day in gold today. A little more difficult for silver. But not a bad day for gold. We're looking at gold today up 460. 460 on gold in the New York spot at 1194.90. Silver right now up a penny at 1709. Platinum was down 8 at 1142. Palladium was also down 12 at 767. We do have the index trading a little bit higher, 0.13 at 97.14. Crude oil, you know, basically unchanged, 47.46. And the paper markets today, you had the Dow down triple digits, just 100 points at 18,011. I remember when 100 points would be, oh my goodness, the Dow is down 100 points. No. Oh, my goodness.
That was back in the old days before they invented thousands.
Yeah, those were the old days. Now you have to have a good, in order for anybody to say, oh, my goodness, it's got to drop 500 points.
Yeah, NASDAQ. And it's because we've got an $18,000 Dow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100 points on a $10,000 Dow is, or a 10,000-point Dow is equivalent to 200 points in today's Dow or thereabouts. It's a bigger number as it takes a bigger.
Of course, but I mean, it's just, and now they all focus on percentages, and really anywhere from one and a half drop percentage is no big deal anymore. The NASDAQ was down 16 at 49.94, and the S&P down 12 at 2,091. Holy smokes, the 10-year yield, 1.88. And the euro is 109. And you still had Germany was up a little bit, up 110. They're back over 12,000. And some of the other countries in Europe were down. London was down just a fraction. And the Asian markets were a little bit stronger. I'm sorry, were negative, but not by much. So I guess there was another big plane crash that happened today. Flying out of Barcelona, crashed into the Swiss Alps. with about 150 folks on board. I guess it was an Airbus. And what's interesting, I mean, this airline purchased this Airbus back in 91 and had no problems, and the last major inspection was 2 years ago. And I just thought planes would have major inspections more often than 2 years. But
they do in the United States. I mean, it's one thing you can say about the American aviation industry. It is I doubt that there's another national aviation industry that's as safe as that in the United States. They inspect the planes on a regular basis, and they're pretty serious about it. And this was Barcelona, Spain.
Well, that's where it flew out of. And,
yeah, I understand, but you know, it just makes you wonder. What airline was it?
I think it was Lufthansa. I think it was Lufthansa.
Yeah, that's German, if I understand correctly. Isn't that correct? Isn't that true?
They had a lot of. It was a budget airline called German Wings.
Budget.
It was
Well, there's your answer. There's your answer, and you get into, I mean, especially if they're flying to Spain. They have to be. Spain has been economically impaired for the last several years. It shows up in maintenance. They have to cut corners someplace to keep generating a profit.
You know, it's
and when they do that in an aviation industry,
You know, what's interesting is they crashed in the French Alps, said it basically disintegrated, but yet they were able to find a black box already. You know, and they were talking about, oh, how much snow, and, you know, it would be very difficult to, you know, to deal with this because of the snow and everything, the amount of snow and in the mountains and the Alps and so forth. But yet the black box. They said it plunged for 8 minutes. But there was no distress call before crashing near the ski resort of Barcelonette. So,
it is odd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it indicates that something happened to the radio, to me, because how does it descend for 8 minutes without somebody saying, hey, you know, somebody's got to either curse or, you know, something. No response for 8 minutes?
No response for 8 minutes. It was a long 8 minutes.
I understand. How could they not have been some sort of a verbal response?
But then again, if they said it was actually, you know, disintegrated, this was the first fatal.
Well, it was disintegrated when it hit the ground, I assume. They don't mean it disintegrated and the parts fell for 8 minutes. I mean, the airplane was intact, but it was in descending for 8 minutes. That's pretty strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, the whole point. Yep. And it was the first fatal accident in the history of the German wings, and is the deadliest on the French mainland since 1974 when a Turkish airline plane crashed, killing 346 people. So, there was no May Day.
Yeah,
and
very strange.
The French Civil Aviation Authorities, here it says that they lost control with the plane, and they declared it was in distress at 10:30 a.m. The crew did not send a mayday. It was the traffic control that decided it was in distress.
That's very strange. I mean, something happened. That means they had to be contacting. They were already sending messages to the aircraft saying, what up? You know, what are you guys doing? You've dropped a couple thousand feet here, and what you're not supposed to. What's going on? And they didn't even get a response. Something happened to break the communication, whatever that was. I don't know. We'll watch and see. But.
Well, the headline says disintegrated over the Alps. To me, when something is disintegrated, it happens before it gets down to the ground.
But how does it take 8 minutes to fall? You can drop out of the space station and hit the ground in less than 8 minutes. You know, in theory.
They were at 38,000.
Yeah, no, but you fall into...
8 minutes is a long time.
Disintegrated, I understand. It doesn't take 8 minutes if it disintegrates at high altitude. It shouldn't take 8 minutes. You wouldn't think it's going to take 8 minutes for the debris to hit the Earth. What a mystery. We'll learn more. We will learn more in the future. And, you know, later on today, tomorrow, whenever, we'll find out more.
Well, it
now
says,
they've got the black box.
They've got
That's
the black box.
We need the White House.
Yeah, the plane is...
We need a black box in the White House so we can find out what's really going on. Maybe at Wall Street, too. That'd be another good place for a black box. Or on the Dow Jones. When they have the crash, we'll be able to see what really caused the crash in the markets.
That's an idea.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, write that down. That was my idea. When they hand out the Pulitzer Prize or the Nobel Peace Prize or whatever, I'm the guy who suggested putting a black box on the Dow Jones, in the White House, maybe even in Congress.
Here's an interesting article. Just a little disgusting. Interesting. Gold and other precious metals that could be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Where do you think they found this, Al?
I've seen the article, Melody, and it went...
Well, I want you to say it.
They have apparently discovered this in human waste.
Poo-poo.
As in, excrement.
Yes.
Right? Apparently, you people have been grinding on your teeth when you have gold... fillings. And the result is quite a lot. There may be other sources besides that, but that's, I haven't read the article, but that's the first one that comes to mind for me. And
well,
apparently they are depositing gold at a concentration that's comparable to what you find when you're chasing gold, when you're actually driving a tunnel, mining it. You understand? I can remember visiting, I think it's Homestake Mine. Is that the name of it, Melody?
Mm-hmm.
Biggest gold mine in the United States, at least at the time. And this would be back 40 years ago, something like that. But they would process a ton of rock, a ton, 2,000 pounds of, in order to get a fraction of an ounce of gold. I don't remember what it was exactly, but I mean, they were getting a pittance. I couldn't understand how you could take a ton of gold, a ton of rock, pound it into, it was so fine, it was finer than flour, and then you soak it with mercury, and then the mercury drains through, catches the gold, precipitates out on some copper plates, and they heat it to boil off the mercury, and what's left is gold. How can you do that for a fraction of an ounce? I don't mean even a quarter of an ounce. It was like, I don't know, a tenth of an ounce or something like that, maybe even less out of a ton of rock. Well, in any case, it was an economically viable process to go through ore that had that little gold in it, and you could still make money off of it. And now they find out that, guess what? Your disposal plant, your local disposal plant, may have concentrations of gold comparable to that you find in mining situations. People found, we found a new place to mine gold, and it's got, a tenth of an ounce per ton. Well, turns out you may not have to dig a hole in the ground. You may be able to find it in the
it's a different type of a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
But this woman, Kathleen Smith of the U.S. Geological Survey, she says they found what was the level of a minimal mineral deposit. They found gold. They also discovered other metals, platinum, silver, in this treated waste. There was this study. Another one was done by a group of experts in the field, found that waste from 1 million Americans could have contained as much as 13 million worth of metals.
$13 million?
$13 million worth of metals.
Now that's interesting, because that translates into $13 for every man, woman. They're measuring a million people, and they found $13 million. So,
well,
in a year's time,
Well, they said They didn't say. It just says it's a study. But you find these metals everywhere in your hair care products, detergents, even nanoparticles that are put in socks to prevent bad odors. So
that's,
I guess,
silver.
All of this, yeah. So this all comes through. And more than 7 million tons of biosolids come out of the U.S. wastewater facilities each year.
Now,
half
wait a
of
second.
It,
I want to understand
let me
something.
Finish. Half of it is used as fertilizer on fields and in forests, and then the other half is incinerated or sent to landfills. So, I mean, they actually do use it.
So the little silver particles that they put in your socks to control odor on your feet. Is there any evidence that that controls the odor down on the waste processing plants?
Hmm? I don't think so.
Don't think so?
No.
Well, I just thought I'd inquire.
Don't think so.
All right.
But anyway, we'll move on from that topic.
Yeah, that
here, here I thought was an interesting article. Jordan today signed a $10 billion deal with Russia on Tuesday to build the kingdom's first nuclear power plant with 2 1,000-megawatt reactors in the country's north. The deal was signed in the Jordanian capital, Amman, with Russia's state-owned Rosatom company. And caps up efforts of the energy-poor kingdom to increase energy sufficiency and reduce imports. And Jordan lacks any local energy sources. They actually import about 96% of their electricity. And, of course, with all the violence in the neighboring Iraq and Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, it certainly has threatened and sometimes has even cut off supplies. So just interesting that I thought.
It is interesting from this perspective. It's evidence that Jordan is not an oil-producing nation. It's there in the Middle East, but it has to be relatively poor compared. Certainly, the implication is that it doesn't produce oil to the extent other nations. You think the Middle East and everybody's got oil-producing capacity. Apparently, Jordan does not, at least not to a significant degree. If they did, they wouldn't have to import electricity.
Well, there's hopes that it will be fueled with uranium that is mined in Jordan. And they lost, you're right, they lost the oil from Iraq. They lost the natural gas from Egypt. And so the country has been bleeding and losing about an average of $3 billion every year. And so they hope to build a state-of-the-art nuclear power plant. So,
well, I don't know what to – good luck with that. But it is evidence that Jordan is impoverished, unlike a lot of – at least some Middle East countries.
Well, the Jordanian government will have a slight majority ownership. So the company Rosatom of Russia will be owning 49% of the plant. So they have a big stake in that plant. So, again, you see Putin in there doing deals along with Russia and all the other ones. And
he could write a book and call it The Art of the Deal.
Well, I mean, they're out there doing business. While the U.S. is – what can the U.S. and Europe focus on? Only staying alive. And they're not out there making business propositions and bettering their countries.
Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to remind the listeners we have our special $2,015. We're going to carry that through. It relates or matches in combination with the year. So it's $2,015 for a Mint State 64, $20 St. Gaudens gold piece, along with 20 of the Morgan silver dollars. And that includes your shipping costs, but they should give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
And the point behind this is that you're going to give people the best deal they can find for $2,015, although depending on the market. The 2015 special today, $2,015, you get a gold coin and a certain number of silver coins. Tomorrow you may get a different combination depending on what the market is doing, but the idea is you'll give them the best price you can. You'll give them the best quantity of coins that you can do for $2,015.
That is correct. We're gonna continue this special as long as it will change as we go along, as you're right, to match the market. So $20,015
is the same. Price stays the same.
Price is quantity. That is correct. The product, quantity and product.
Yep.
So it is a great little special, and people like it.
Good.
So.
Okay, we got an article here from, the Times, English publication. Banks vulnerable to liquidity squeeze as digital shift hastens capital flight. That's the headline. The British Banking Association warns that regulation must catch up with changes in the industry as faster money transfers threaten to accelerate runs on banks. All right, so the British Banking Association, BBA, is... they're advocating that regulation must catch up. We need more regulation. All right. Banks are becoming increasingly vulnerable to liquidity crises as the advance of digital money threatens to hasten runs on banks. The BBA, again, I believe it means British Banking Association. It's odd. I went to their website. They don't even tell me what the acronym stands for, but I believe it's British Banking Association, said senior bankers are worried that bank runs could be more severe than in the past since consumers are able to withdraw their life savings at the touch of a button from a smartphone or computer. Right? You couldn't do that before. You had to, if you had a bank run, you've all seen the movie, what is it? It's a Wonderful World. George, I can't remember his last name, he's running the bank, and there's a bank run, and everybody coming to the bank, and they want their money, and they're standing in line and taking their dollars out of the bank. That was a bank run that we're familiar with. But today, because we have digital currency, it's possible to have a bank run where people that are just sitting at home can withdraw their money or move it to other accounts by means of cell phones or their computers. And they don't have to drive down to the bank. They don't have to stand in line in a queue. They can make it happen right now. And under certain circumstances, it's possible for banks to have essentially a flash crash where, for whatever reason, people lose confidence in the bank and they say, I'm getting my money out of that bank right now and I'm going to move it over into another account, another bank. And if enough people move at the same time, they can put the bank out of business. Why? Because the bank doesn't have more than maybe 10% of the funds it needs for every $1 million that it has deposited. It's only got $100,000 on hand. And if you get enough people to say, I want my share of that $1 million myself, you can exceed the $100,000 in capital that they have on hand for the $1 million. And next thing you know, the bank is insolvent. And the bankers are worried about that, as represented in this article. And this isn't early. This isn't news per se. This has been a concern. We were talking about this probably 4 or 5 years ago. We talked about a number of bank runs that had taken place here in the United States that were fundamentally digital in nature. Right? But in part, the BBA called for regulators to ensure that all companies offering banking services receive equal levels of regulation, saying a new wave of digital providers needs to protect consumers in the way that banks do. Well, what they're talking about, here they are, the banks want more regulation, and they want Bitcoin, for example, to be under the same regulation as the banks and any other similar digital currencies, in addition to the digital fiat dollars that we all have and use with credit cards, Visa cards, debit cards, and so on. They want these new competitors subject to the same degree of regulation, and the purpose is to protect the consumers. Now, I read that, and anytime I hear anyone who is the government or is closely associated with government arguing that they are here to protect the consumers, I am skeptical, all right? Maybe even a little cynical. But I don't believe they're here to protect the consumers at all. They're here to protect the banks. And more than protecting the banks, when they want this equal regulation to help resist the possibility of flash crashes at banks, they're not just talking about protecting the banks. I think they're talking about protecting digital currency. They're talking about protecting our fiat monetary system. And everyone, we all enjoy it. Look, I can take a credit card. I have a MasterCard, a Visa, an American Express. I go down and just swipe the card. I don't need any cash in my wallet. The card will carry it. You know, I can pay for my expenses with these little pieces of plastic. That's very convenient. But the flip side of that convenience is that it's also very conducive to bank runs. Insofar as we like that digital currency, we also are in a world where if all of a sudden, for whatever reason, somebody says, oh my gosh, the Bank of America is going broke. Bang! It spreads on the internet. The next thing you know, we've got who knows how many people are pulling their money out of the Bank of America based on what may be nothing but a rumor. And yet that rumor, if it goes viral, it could trigger a flash crash, a digital withdrawal by means of cell phones and computers. And it happens right now. It doesn't, there is no, there's no requirement to go to the bank. You can do it because the currency is digital. You can move it, make it move from the privacy of your home, from out in the street, from in your car. And the banks are worried about this. And I'm trying to make the point that if they really want to protect the banks from electronic bank runs, from digital bank runs, all they'd have to do is go back to a physical money. If we had physical money in the sense that we had gold and silver coins back in the era when George, can't remember his last name, was running the bank in Glenwood Falls or whatever it was, and it's a wonderful life. If we had physical money, people actually have to get up out of there, off the couch, you got to start the car, drive down to the bank, stand in line at the bank and try to get your physical gold coins or silver coins out of the bank. The whole process of simply running down to the bank, going there, is going to slow the bank run down. All right? The process of standing in line is going to slow the possibility of a bank run down. You can bring a bucket, you can bring a box, you can bring a wheelbarrow to put your gold coins into, your silver coins. It's going to slow the process of a bank panic down. But with the digital currency, that bank run can happen right now. And they're concerned about it. And it's interesting to me from the perspective that what they're really trying to protect is the digital currency. They're trying to figure a way. We've got to have a digital currency. We've got to have it. Part of the reason, why do we want digital currency? In part so the government can track every one of your purchases. Every time you buy something, MasterCard, Visa, there's a trail. It's not like using cash. We have a record. What have you been buying? Right, we can look that up. Insofar as government wants to monitor us, they want that digital currency. But insofar as they have a digital currency that aids in monitoring our purchases, they have a correlative vulnerability to bank runs that can take place on a digital basis. So, what are we going to do, Melody? Are we going to maintain the digital currency with perhaps new regulations that people can't all make withdrawals at a particular time out of banks? Or are we going to restrict the digital? Or are we going back to physical? What do you think is going to happen out of this? What the tension between the threat of digital bank runs and government's need to have digital currency?
Well, I mean, certainly with digital bank runs, all they need to do is pull the plug. They can stop it real quick. But it's all about taking whatever they can from each and every one of us. And so, you know, it's all about them. It's all about getting, it's all about them taking as much as they can. And that's,
you know, but it's not necessarily true that they can just pull the plug and stop. Well, they can, but if they, because it will, because the news will go out that Bank of America, for example, for whatever reason, might have been a false rumor. We heard it. It went viral. Everybody tries to pull their money out of Bank of America, and Bank of America pulls the plug, and you can't get your money. Now, when are they going to turn the bank back on? How long is it going to take for people to lose their fear that they're going to lose their money in the bank? And what's going to happen when, if they turn it off, that becomes an evidence that the bank is in trouble. A lot of people are going to read it that way, and as soon as they turn it back on, they're going to, now listen, we're going to turn it back on, but don't take any money out.
Well, I would think,
I mean,
though,
it's a complex problem. It's not easily resolved.
But I think, though, that if we get to the point where that we actually have a bank run in that manner, a digital bank run, I mean, it's, what difference is there with Cyprus? I mean, they shut it down. When people don't have access.
What happened? Did Cyprus,
we're not gonna accept
Cyprus
your,
collapse?
We're not going to accept your password. Not that
they
point in time.
Still, Cyprus went into a tailspin, and they did not easily. They didn't come out. We'll just shut it off for 2 days, and everything will be fine. No, it wasn't.
No, of course not.
All right, so it's as dangerous. This is a very strange situation where that convenience of using the digital currency has to be weighed against the threat of a digital bank run. And again, this is if we had enough currency in the bank to actually back up whatever everybody wants, then the digital bank runs would be irrelevant. Because, but thanks to fractional reserve banking, we only have a fraction. They owe $1 million. They've got $100,000 in the vault. And not even in the vault. That's figuratively speaking. They have $100,000 on the computer hard drive for every $1 million that they have, that have been deposited. If more than 10% of the people move at the same time, they can wipe out the bank's reserve. I mean, part of the reason for this, part of the reason I bring this up is it's interesting. It creates an interesting question of balance and how are they going to deal with this situation. But more than that, it also tells us that the banking system that seems so benign and so convenient with ATM machines and debit cards and so on, there is a kind of vulnerability that's built into that system. And you can sit and wonder how long it's going to be before we see a flash crash for a bank, a major bank, or maybe a flash crash for the banking industry. And what are they going to do and how will they handle it? And is it a good idea to be keeping all your wealth in a system that's vulnerable in the sense that the digital currency that has the vulnerability that digital currency creates? Or does it make better sense to say, listen, I think I'll keep my bank in a shoebox, you know, up in the closet that I have full of gold coins? Where do I want to protect my wealth? Do I want to protect digital wealth? You know, we talk about this on the program on a regular basis. We're complaining about, we're warning about the dangers of paper wealth. Paper in the sense of paper dollars and paper in the sense of equities in the stock market. And we're warning that these paper debt instruments are, in my opinion, will inevitably lose an enormous amount of their current face, their current apparent value. And we're trying to tell people, look, you want to get physical. Don't take a promise to pay. That's what the paper is. It's a promise to pay. It's not a payment. Promise to pay. All right, get a payment. What's a payment? Gold coin. That's a payment. You've been paid. Got gold, got silver. You've been paid. Got a piece of paper. You have a promise to be paid. And the promises can't all be kept. We warn about that in relationship to paper debt instruments. But the warning is perhaps even more valid in relationship to digital debt instruments that can, again, suffer one of these flash crashes. Then what? Nobody knows. Is it sensible to put your money in that digital media? It has to be done. I mean, there's no question that most of us have to do this. It's not a situation where I'm advocating don't have any digital currency. That's not what I'm trying to say here. But I am suggesting that maybe you need to think whether or not you want 100% of your wealth stored in a digital or paper medium, or if you want that wealth stored in the form of a payment, not a promise to pay, payment, gold, silver, piece of land, gun, ammunition, something tangible, that's a payment. Piece of paper, promise to pay. Where do you want it, Melody? Promises or payments?
Payments, absolutely. I'd much rather have a shoebox full of gold than digits.
You know, it just makes sense, and you see the vulnerability, and you can see this. No matter how smart they are, the day is in. We've seen flash crashes on the Dow Jones, all right? Given that, why would anyone think we can't see similar flash crashes for banks, bank accounts, and so on? You've seen it happen. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. Might not happen for 5 years. I don't know when it's going to happen. But that risk is there, and it should be factored in with your decision on how you're going to store your wealth. What medium will you use to store your wealth? Paper, digital, promise to pay, or payments, which include gold and silver coin. Let's take another break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. And we've got a caller, Joe from Arkansas. Hello, Joe. What you got for us?
Yeah, well, I got a question about the hypothetical scenario you've been describing about a digital money run on the Bank of America. And that's this. It seems I remember reading somewhere that that was one of the purposes for which the Federal Reserve was created. So that all Bank of America would have to do in a situation like that is pick up the phone and call the Federal Reserve and say, we need an emergency loan of $10 billion, you know, right away, and the Federal Reserve would wire them the money or email them the money or whatever they do. And so they would have the money to meet a run like that. It seems I remember reading somewhere that that's one of the purposes for which the Federal Reserve was created. Do you know if that's true, or maybe that would be a good question for James Corbett next time you have him on?
Well, it may be a good question for James Corbett, but I don't know. But whatever the Federal Reserve was created for, it was not created with the idea that they'd have to deal with these bank runs in a matter of, you know, potentially minutes. If they were concerned about dealing with bank runs, all right, it's going to last for several days. You know, it's going to take time, hours, days, for people to get their money out of the bank. This digital just accelerates the whole problem, where whatever their intentions were, they're not easily equipped to deal with the potential of a bank flash crash.
Yeah,
and
okay.
My point is, this is inherent. I'm trying to illustrate the point that this is part of the consequences of going to a paper and then digital currency. And this vulnerability is built in with our increased efficiency. Yeah, I've said this a number of times. We become more efficient. All right, they have computers. They have people who study one thing or another. They have the just-in-time supply system. It used to be that a grocery store was probably 80% warehouse, and 20%, the front of the grocery store, was where people went in and they bought canned goods and whatever off the shelves, but behind the grocery store was a warehouse where they stored beans and Campbell's soup and beef and whatever else they had in that warehouse that they'd bring out to the front. Now, what they did is they got smart and they said, wait, we can do this more efficiently. We'll have a just-in-time supply system, and the trucks will pull up. They will know by monitoring the sales at the cash registers, we know exactly when you're going to run out of Campbell's beans. And therefore, we will have those Campbell's beans. We'll have a fresh truckload of beans coming in, or not just even a truckload. How much do you need to get you through the next day or two till the next truck arrives? And you don't need that big warehouse behind the grocery store anymore. Well, that's a very efficient. It saves money. You don't have to invest your capital in the warehouse and in the supplies that you keep in the warehouse. Very efficient system. But where did the efficiency come from? It came from our margin for error. If something breaks down and you got a warehouse full of groceries behind the grocery store, you have enough groceries to carry the community, or at least the normal customers. You may not have enough in that warehouse to carry them for several weeks. But with the just-in-time supply system, you've got enough for maybe 3 days, which means our increased efficiency paradoxically makes us more vulnerable. The efficiency comes out of our margin for error. It used to be, all right, if they stop shipping the groceries into the grocery store, we got enough in the warehouse to carry us, who knows, maybe a month. But now we've got a maximum of 3 days. That makes us more vulnerable, and this is my point. We've got a fiat currency system. First, it's paper. Far more convenient than gold and silver coins. It makes us more vulnerable. But then we go to digital currency, and that makes us even more vulnerable. You know, and it's not just what about how many reports have we had in the news of millions of people who've had their credit card and debit card information stolen off of computers at Target and wherever else? This is more evidence of the vulnerability that's built into the enormous convenience of the digital currency system. And you sit there and look, think, how long do you think it's going to be before that thing cracks up? All right, at least for, you know, one or two big significant banks, maybe for the system. Not impossible. Where do I want to store my wealth? Where do you want to store your wealth, Joe?
Wherever it's safest.
Well, you don't have to tell us if it's buried in the north corner or the south corner of your backyard. No, I understand. But it raises a concern that people need to think about. We can't get away. You know, most people can't do without the digital currency, but do you want to store all your wealth in that medium? Or is it reasonable to just put as much as you need, more or less, to get by in the digital, but put the mass of your wealth in a form that is tangible? What do you think, Joe?
Well, what all this reminds me of is a story I read once about Henry David Thoreau. And he said that his neighbor was all excited because the railroad had just come in, and now instead of taking 4 hours to walk to Boston, he could get on the train and get there in about a half hour. But Henry David Thoreau figured it out, and he said, well, it takes him 4 hours to do the work to make the money to get his ticket on the train. And so while he's working 4 hours to make the money go on the train, I can walk to Boston. And so he doesn't really gain anything. And so if you new technology like that, you know, there's always trade-offs. It's not completely gain. You know, there's always something lost, something won. Something gained, something lost. And so with all these trade-offs, you know, if we really figured it out, we might not be any better off now, you know, overall, then we would. That's something worth thinking about, I think. And thanks for your program.
I don't know who's dialing in. Who's dialing in, anyway? I'm hearing someone trying to dial in every so often. And I don't know, is that you, Joe, or Melody, or who is that? I just heard someone hang up, and it may have been Joe. I'm not sure. Joe, are you still there? Joe makes a point that reminds me of a British scientist, and I remember seeing this. His analysis, and I'll bet you this is at least 30, maybe 40 years ago. And he analyzed nuclear power plants. All right? And he analyzed how much energy it takes to produce a nuclear power plant, including manufacturing the concrete and the steel and the technology and refining the uranium that they're using to drive the power plant. And when you get done and you calculate how much energy goes into building a nuclear power plant, he calculated that, in fact, you spend more money building the plant than the plant will produce during its 20 years useful lifetime, if I recall, but during its useful lifetime. Now, I thought that was a brilliant analysis. I don't argue that the analysis was necessarily correct, but it was probably close. It's probably plausible. And we got on to what Joe was talking about. He was just saying, hey, what are we really getting? Are we really advancing? And most people, you look out the window and say, well, yeah, of course we're advancing. We have, you know, taller buildings, and we have faster, more efficient automobiles and better aircraft and all that. But, and that's evidence that we must be advancing. But are we? Because much of the advances we see in our technology is based on going into enormous debt. We are so deep in debt right now, we'll never be able to pay off the debt. And if you look at it from that perspective, it's not so different from the report by an English scientist, again, back 40 years ago, that we expend more energy building a nuclear power plant than we're ever going to get out of it. And it makes you wonder, what's really going on here? Are we really making a gain? Yes, it looks like we've made gains. Modern cars they have more in common with spaceships. The cars, when I was a kid, they have more in common with buckboards. And today's cars are sophisticated to the point where they look like UFOs, practically. If you could have taken one of today's cars and delivered it to somebody back in the 1950s, they'd say, oh my gosh, this must be alien technology. No, it's not. We've made some extraordinary progress, but we've also gone into some extraordinary debt. And has there been a real gain, or is this simply a kind of illusion? Or sit back and say, yeah, we're doing really good. Well, yeah, unless we have to pay the debt. So these are questions. I don't have answers for these questions, but they're the kind of questions that you can sit back, you think about, and say, I wonder where I should be investing my wealth right now. Are we vulnerable? Are we safe? Are we vulnerable? Are we safe? And if it's not clear, if it's simply not even clear, where are we safe? Where is our wealth safe?
With Melody at Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I mean, you and I were talking about this prior to the program. It's like the more, you know, the more advancements we have, sometimes it seems like we get further behind.
Yeah.
It's harder to do things. It takes longer to do things. It's just like, and it at times it just drives me insane because it's more difficult to function. And I don't think it's a matter because a group of us are just getting older and we weren't born into, you know, this technology that has been created. It's not about being born into it and knowing how to do it better. I think that in some degree the technology has actually made it more difficult, or it's a longer process. It's not as quick and as fast as they at least allow us to use, but certainly if you had any type of bank runs or anything like that digitally or, you know, through a computer and so forth, they could, it depends. It depends if they want to keep you from pulling your funds out, or if the flash crash is their benefit in order to steal people's money. So,
I think there will be some of both of them. You know, some of these flash crashes can be implemented perhaps to, one way or another, somebody will figure a way of using a flash crash to move $1 billion to the Bank of Tahiti. All right, so you can go down there and lounge on the sand for the balance of your natural life. Somebody will figure a way to do that, or at least think they'll figure it. They'll try to. It's just inevitable. And we hear these kinds of problems. There was some Englishman back 5 years ago, thereabouts, precipitated some sort of a crash in for one of the big English banks, and I don't remember which one it was, very nearly destroyed it. Maybe it did destroy it by siphoning off money and moving it to some secret account. This is all doable with digital. It can happen. Can't happen with physical gold. Can't happen with physical silver. There's an inconvenience that's involved in using the physical coins. There's also great safety involved. That inconvenience translates into you have a form of wealth that is stable. All right? If you know where if you can hide it in the box in the backyard or up on the shelf or wherever you're going to hide it, as long as you can get at it, it's good. Can't say the same thing to the same degree about digital. So, and the real point on this is the whole system is becoming increasingly efficient. That efficiency comes out of our margin for error. That means we, as we become increasingly efficient, we become increasingly vulnerable. You would think that more efficiency makes us less vulnerable. No, it doesn't. It makes us more vulnerable. Right? It's like a spaceship. You know, highly complex, highly efficient machine, extraordinary machine. But if it gets hit by one itty-bitty meteorite, the whole thing can explode. Right? The greater efficiency translates into greater vulnerability. There are other concerns with this. You get into the police state. To some degree, the police state becomes increasingly necessary because we have become increasingly efficient and therefore increasingly vulnerable. One high school kid who's adept at hacking into computers can, in theory, set off a chain of events in our banking system that could wipe out a whole bank. That wasn't even conceivable when I was a child. Today it's possible. How do you prevent that? This becomes one of the motivations behind government saying, we've got to have more regulation. We've got to have a police state. Why? Because the nation has become so extraordinarily efficient that one little speck of dust in the wheels, in the gears of this magnificent machine, one little speck of dust can stop the whole system. There are consequences here that I don't have answers for. I can see the forces. I can see there are competing forces. All I can say is, from my perspective, I don't think they can hold this thing together forever. Right? And as it becomes more efficient, more vulnerable, it only increases the probability, from my perspective, we're going to see some sort of a dislocation, a major correction, maybe even a collapse. If that happens, what do you want to do? Where do you want to be? Where do you want your wealth? All right, store it on somebody's hard drive? Up in the cloud, or, you know, down in the basement, up in the attic, hole in the wall. Where do you want your wealth? We're out of time. We want to thank all of you for listening to the program. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back tomorrow, and we hope you will tune in at that time. Until then, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.